Blog Talk Radio.
Reverend Edward Pinckney, the first pastor in the history of mankind to be sent to prison for quoting the Bible. I'm happy today. I'm happy today to be here. I'm glad that you're available to listen to the show today. We had a tremendous time this week. Matter of fact, even though I'm still under house arrest, it's day 75. Day 75 of the illegal house arrest. Now, here's the deal. We won our court, our case, in the appeal court, but yet the Barron County Courthouse has refused to lift the tether. I tell you this. This is something really, really tremendous and something that the whole world should know about. We're in a position now to move forward and to deal with what's happening today. But I tell you this, it's not just here in Barron County where these judges think they are above the law. It's happening all over the United States. But it's time that we, the people, take a stand. It's more of us than them. I tell you this, this is something that we all need to sit down and talk about. What is wrong with our justice system? And today I plan to have a couple of people who has been involved with our justice system on the air. But I tell you, what do we need to do? We need to learn to work as a team and not as individuals. Not as individuals. Is Larry, are you there?
I'm here, brother.
Oh, I'm happy to hear your voice this morning, or that should I say this afternoon, here in the city of Benton Harbor, the state of Michigan. I tell you, Larry, this has been a tremendous week for the people once again. We keep getting these little bitty victories, and it's something that everybody needs to stand up and talk about. Whirlpool is, at this moment, is very, very, very angry and upset because now they have no seat at the table of the NAACP.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm shocked to know that, a big corporation like Whirlpool we want to sit at the table of the NAACP. I don't quite understand it. Why? Because I this is my belief, then you can tell me your belief. But before we get into that, Larry, let's talk a little bit about you. I need to know how things going with you. Now, I know you're a warrior all by yourself. You're a hero all everywhere, all over the country, you know, but yet and still you have selected to co-host the Pinckney to Pinckney show. I tell you, I'm honored to have you. I mean, it's truly a pleasure just to know that I know a man like you.
So, right back at you, brother.
Hey. I appreciate that, too. I really do. But I want you to talk a little bit about, before our guests come on, and just in case he somehow don't come on, we can talk longer. But what I want to talk about you, and I want you to tell us a little bit more about the Black Panther Party, and tell us a little bit more about you.
Well, to be as blunt as possible, I have, since my mid-teens, have been a fighter, that is to say a warrior, that is to say someone who believes in revolutionary struggle, who believes in Black liberation and the liberation of all justice-loving people, irrespective of color. I joined the party, that is the Black Panther Party, when I was 17 years of age, ultimately became a section leader in the party. I engaged in various programs that the party was responsible for building, such as the breakfast programs, making sure that our baby girls and boys, our young children had breakfast, they had food to eat before they went to those racist schools, which are still racist, also such as the shoe program, making sure that our people in the community had shoes, the clothes program, making sure, of course, that our people had clothes, and the overall food program, making sure we would get bags and bags and bags of groceries, and this is all free. Okay, and be clear about this. There was no charge, period. This is what we meant by all power to the people, serving the community, serving the people. And then, you know, I was involved in many of these programs. And then, of course, the free medical program. People don't realize that even today, as people are fighting for single-payer universal health care, which is essentially saying free health care, and it should be free health care. That's a human right. But back in the late 60s, the Black Panther Party was fighting for this. And in our own communities, what we did was to establish health clinics where the community members of all colors, it was primarily black, but of all colors, could go and get free, and I repeat, free medical treatment. Okay, they say an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, and we certainly believe that, and the party believes that. Mm-hmm. So those are things that I and many, many other party members, Black Panther Party members, engaged in. Of course, you don't hear about that, generally speaking, in this corporate media, because it's still all about discredit and disinform, not inform, but disinform and misinform. So we have to inform ourselves. So we've been doing that for when I say we, I'm talking about people of color and all justice-loving people have been doing that for years and years and years, and we'd better intensify. In terms of myself, I can only say that I was a part of, and hopefully still am a part of, an ongoing struggle, a struggle to bring about economic justice, social justice, judicial justice to people around this country and indeed ultimately around the world. But, they say charity begins at home, and home is where the heart is, and my heart is right here in what is called the United States of America. And this, because this is where we have to begin to make real change, not BS change like a certain Obama person talks about change. We know there's no change. He can't bring no change. He's a part of the same old system.
Yeah.
But, the bottom line is that the people who bring the change are we ourselves, no one else, we ourselves. I've always believed that. I've learned that firsthand, that it is the people who do that. I had the honor and privilege of being regional minister of Interior in the Republic of New Africa, which Robert Williams, who is a black militant activist, originally, by the way, brother, originally himself, a strong leader in the NAACP.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
That's a blessing. Hey, Tucker, you and Huey P. Newton was protégés, comrades, I think, as you call them. Talk to me a little bit about Huey P. Newton. I know a lot of people know of him, but they don't really know some of the personal things. And I have to take my hat off to you, Larry, because I know some of the things that the Black Panther Party has done, and I know that it's so incredible. Your work was, it paved the way for the work that I'm doing today.
Well, thank you, brother. Thank you from all of us, not just from me, but from all of us, because we're still engaged in this same struggle.
Absolutely.
As far as Brother Huey goes, I have to be very blunt and very honest and say I loved him. I loved him as my comrade. I loved him as my brother. Was Huey a saint? No way, no how. Indeed, none of us were saints.
Absolutely.
But let me put it this way. The Federal Bureau of Investigation, the local and state, working in conjunction with the local and state police, did everything they could to divide, to discredit, to tear the leadership of the national leadership and local leadership of the Black Panther Party apart. And when I say everything, I mean they did every dastardly, conceivable, nasty thing that you can even imagine. Okay, that's so when people stand up and sing America, let them make sure they remember that.
Wow.
Now, as far as Huey is concerned, I am very honored to have known Brother Huey.
Mm-hmm.
One of the few things I keep up on my wall is a note from Brother Huey thanking me for some of the work that I had done, and I am very privileged and very honored to have known the brother, to have spoken with him many times, worked with him. In fact, I am in the archives at Stanford University, Dr. Huey P. Newton, because people don't realize Huey got his doctorate degree, his PhD. Okay, but you know, these letters don't mean nothing to us. All they are is tools, as far as we're concerned.
Right.
But let me tell you, Huey did get his PhD from the University of California at Santa Cruz in philosophy, and you know, it's really important. In the sense of, you know, they said we were all gangsters, thugs, we didn't know nothing, blah, blah, blah. Huey disproved that, as did other members of the party. Kathleen Cleaver disproved that.
Mm-hmm.
Even Bobby Seale disproved that. You know, we had all kinds of, Erica Huggins disproved that. All of these people were national leaders, but there would, of course, been no Black Panther Party without the rank and file sisters and brothers. Sisters like Tarika Lewis, I believe her last name is, from Sacramento, California. Brothers and sisters in Philadelphia, brothers and sisters all over the country who were engaged in the breakfast programs and I should say the free breakfast programs, the free medical programs, the free shoe programs. This is what it's all about. So,
absolutely.
You know,
let me ask you a question.
Yes.
Did you ever have the chance of meeting Bobby Seale?
Oh, yes. I met Bobby at least four or five times, at least, probably a great deal more than that. But, yeah,
right.
I used to meet with there was a restaurant or club, nightclub, whatever you want to call it, in Oakland at the time, in the late 60s, early 70s, called the Lamp Post. And from time to time, Huey would have me go over there and meet with both he and Bobby Seale. So, yes,
oh.
I met with Bobby a number of times. Also, when Bobby was running for mayor of Oakland, Oakland, California, I was the co-chair of the San Francisco Black Caucus and was, of course, very supportive and went to a number of meetings at which Bobby and other party members were present. So, yeah, of course, I met Bobby.
Oh, that's beautiful. I believe you. See, this is an education all by itself. You know, when I think of you, you know, I think of all these other people, you know, and you right up there with them. You know, any time when you speak of the Black Panther Party, I grew up in Chicago, so I know like Fred Hampton, they was all around my age, and when he got killed, that's when he actually became famous. You see.
Right.
And here's the kill. Here's the thing. They not only killed Fred Hampton, Mark Clark, but they also killed that house.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's what people don't really. And it was right down the street from the high school that I attended.
Really?
I went to John Marshall High School. It was right down the street from. It was a matter of fact. The house I believe was on Adams or either Monroe, which is on the other side. They're the same, you know, you go out the back door, you be on Monroe. You go out the front door, you be on Adams. And the high school was the same way. So and that's what really got our attention when he was murdered.
Yeah, well, see, brother, the thing is that the reality is that the Black Panther Party was under so much pressure by the hypocritical racist, and I'm saying they're still hypocrites and they're still racist, federal, local, and state authorities, and they were, you know, throwing our national leaders in prison, everybody from Huey to Eldridge. Eldridge Cleaver was in exile, was in forced exile. Chairman Bobby Seale, was being held in prison either in New Haven, Connecticut, or prior to that, everybody knows that in Chicago, speaking of Chicago, that he was, you know, amongst those people. In fact, he was the only person who was actually gagged in the courtroom, not allowed to speak in this land of the free and the home of the brave.
And you know what? And that's what I remember.
Yeah.
I remember when they gagged him. And, you know, and what it did, it made him more famous than what he was. At that time, when they gagged him, because then people usually didn't stand up in the courtroom until then.
Right.
I know, like, in Chicago, we had some pretty aggressive guys there. But people was settled. See, everybody started talking about the Black Panther Party. And everybody wanted to be a Panther.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody. That was the thing.
Well, that's because, to be quite frank, is that, as brother comrade brother Huey P. Newton would say, you know, we were of the people. Now,
mm-hmm.
we were by no means perfect, but we were definitely of the people. We struggled to serve the people, and the people knew that. They
yeah.
knew that, you know, and we would stand for no stuff, and the people knew that. They knew that we would lay our lives on the line, as did in Chicago, for example, as did Fred Hampton and Mark Clark, who were murdered in their sleep.
Right.
Murdered in their sleep.
Right.
There were so many bullet holes in that building that you're surprised that the damn thing could even stand up after the police lied and said they were returning fire. How could they possibly have been returning fire to two men who were sleeping and who in fact were dead, who had
Absolutely.
Been murdered? You know,
mm-hmm.
So nothing has really substantively changed, and I say substantively meaning meaningfully. Nothing has meaningfully changed for poor people, people of color, or black people. Nothing, generally speaking. Now, we have, like last week we talked about on the program, we have our elite sellouts. We have, but we've always had that right from the plantation days. We've had our elite sellouts. You know, who they were, like Malcolm X would say, you know, the plantation, the house, the mansion would catch on fire, and the elite Negroidian would be more upset than the master.
Absolutely.
Why the master would get sick, and what did the elite Negroidian say? Master, we sick.
We sick.
We sick.
That's right.
Okay.
Hey, Larry.
You know. Yes, brother. Yes.
Did you ever in your life ever imagine? See, the picture that I saw of y'all, you know, with your beret, y'all all black with your boots on, that was the most tremendous thing that I have ever seen in my life. I tell you, it made you want to do something that you never done before. You know, my hat is off to the Black Panther Party because I know what they have done and what they have accomplished, and I know you, and I know what you have done and what you have accomplished. I mean, you and Huey and Everson, you have set the groundwork. Matter of fact, the work y'all done was done is so tremendous that even today people talk about what y'all have done in the community. You see, and that is so tremendous. But you know what I want to do? I want to bring on Gabriel right now. Yeah. Gabriel, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Reverend.
Okay. How you doing today?
Oh, alhamdulillah, excellent. And
yes.
I want to say power to the people, to Brother Comrade Larry.
Yes.
All
yes.
power to the people, brother.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Gabriel is one of those guys who have always been on the front. And he himself has been a victim of this system. And when I say the victim, I'm thinking, if you can correct me if I'm wrong, you was wounded. Is that correct?
That is correct, Reverend. I was, a brief thumbnail sketch. Most every Black Panther has and had a red file. My red file was utilized to, how would you say, justify a shooting here in the city of Detroit. My rank in the party, I came out of the Denver, Colorado chapter. I was Minister of Information, Denver, Colorado chapter. And it was just after our chapter here in Detroit was vamped on, most of the Minister of Defense and most of the brothers and sisters that were in there that day were taken to Wayne County Jail. They were housed there for some months, and I was asked to come back down to Detroit because I was born here in Detroit,
mm-hmm.
Reinitialize and reestablish some operations in the Indiandale branch. Well, you know, that was way before I was shot. But however, saying that, I was trying to lay the groundwork to the fact that there was a dossier that the state police here in Michigan and the local Detroit police utilized to justify a shooting of myself.
Wow. How many times were you shot?
I was shot. I was hit in the head with a 38 special and shot once. Now the bullet went about half an inch from my heart, and it exited 3/4 of an inch from my spine.
Were your wife also shot?
The bullet it passed through me, Reverend. It did lodge itself in my wife's right breast.
And that killed her.
Sometime later, it was ascertained that she had they had found a cancerous growth. Now, this is sometime about a year and a half to 2.5 years after the bullet was removed from her, that the cancer was found in that exact same spot that the bullet had penetrated.
Interesting. Wow. Well, I know how you were about this situation. I know how touching it is for you. But you know, your work that you do inside the city of Detroit is so tremendous. I mean, what you do, and also General Baker. You know, and we're all connected, not only because we live in the state of Michigan, but we're connected. Period. Because we got a lot of work that need to be done. And also, I do want to say this. Brother Gabriel is the one who is actually responsible for me being the president of the NAACP.
Go ahead now.
He's the one who actually initiated it. He's the one who put it together. And once we came up with the idea that, you know, this could be a recruiting tool, we decided that this would be a perfect example to get people together and to move forward. You see, Larry, this Gabriel, we usually talk almost every other day at least. And he's been a really, really strong supporter. He's always at the court hearings. He's always there to support. And, you know, my heart goes out to him because he know exactly, you know, when the call seems like. And he always have that thing. He said, well, what are we going to do today? Or what is our next move? And this is, see, to me, that's important because I'm always planning. See, my thing is this. Anytime I do something, I just don't do something just to be doing it. You see, when I do something, I always have a plan afterwards.
Right.
Even I didn't have a plan when they sent me to prison. You know, but I did have a plan once I got there.
I know that's right.
Yeah. So that was important. And by Gabriel also being a Black Party member, and Larry, you being a Black Party member, it shows the connection right there. And I know how wonderful you are, Larry. I can just feel you. You know, when you're not feeling good or something has happened. I can feel it.
If
your arm is hurting, my arm is hurting.
Yeah.
You see, because that's the way I feel. But Gabriel, tell us some more of some of the stuff that you've been doing.
Well, Reverend, over the last few years, I had run for Michigan State Senate. Here in the 4th District, Detroit. Now, at the point in time that I ran against John Conyers' wife, Monica Conyers.
Monica, okay.
I, I didn't necessarily win at that particular point, but what I did do was right after the election, it was my intention to build a platform on which a unified front across the state of Michigan could solidly rest itself on. Now, the reason I did that, because over the years I've been past consultant to State Senator Basil Brown of the 2nd District, Human Relations Commissioner, as I am now for the City of Hamtramck, past consultant to State Representative Ed Vaughn, who used to own Vaughn Bookstore, and he's now down in Dalton, Georgia.
Okay.
I'm currently 8 Mile Wyoming Citizens District Council president and chairman. You know, I've done everything quite that I possibly could to keep myself in the political arena. Not too long ago, I was elected secretary of the Hamtramck NAACP branch, which quite literally is the only branch that I know of that has a Muslim president and second vice president.
Interesting. Hey, you know, let me say this, you know, all these wonderful things you're doing. How do you feel? What is your connection with Yvonne White? The
she is a staunch supporter of African American liberation struggle, and she is also the president of the state NAACP here in Michigan.
Okay. Okay.
She is quite literally the head honcho in the state in terms of the NAACP chapter reorganization, regeneration, and organization.
Absolutely. And on Friday, while I was up in Lansing, I had the opportunity of meeting several people from Baltimore. I always use the term from Washington, but they're not from Washington. They're from Baltimore, and which
Baltimore,
is
Baltimore,
you know,
Maryland, yeah,
right. Which is, you know, is very close to Washington, and the argument. Well, what they approached me with, I had used the term that if Yvonne White refused to do anything, I was gonna go straight to Washington, and it kind of like got their attention a little bit. Because on Friday, they approached me and wanted to know what did I mean by going straight to Washington. And like I told them, I said, it gave me a open door to discuss that with some of the head honchos from the Baltimore office. Because they was concerned about me going straight to Washington. Mm-hmm. And what I told them was that the reason Yvonne has a history of not wanting to cross those corporations down here. And I said, we got too many issues. Yeah, I said, I told him, we had too many issues. I said, but he gave me a phone number to call just in case she doesn't do anything. So that accomplished exactly what I was trying to accomplish.
That's
you see?
Super. That's what you did is exactly in line with the new president of the national NAACP national Benjamin Jealous.
Absolutely, you know, and it was designed to let him know that we're not going to be sitting here twiddling our thumbs, wondering whether you're going to do anything or not, because if you don't. We either you with us or you against us. If you're not with us, we're gonna roll right over you, you know. And that's the message that I want to send to them. Matter of fact, it got to the Home Office faster than I anticipated. I thought, see, my way of thinking that I would write them a letter. I had no idea on Friday. They held me up in the hallway. They wanted to talk to me. I'm on my way to the men's room. I tell you, but it accomplished what I set out to do, which is the most important thing. And that's what makes it so wonderful.
You know what, Reverend? They
talk
might be afraid that you will spill the beans that all the time that you were locked up, they didn't do diddly.
Well, they got a hunch that that's coming. There's no doubt in my mind that they are going to have to answer for that. You know,
and well, they should.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, brother, let me interject very quickly and simply say that it is time for these organizations, such as the NAACP in this case, to return to their roots. And their roots were, okay, the NAACP, as you know, began as a very radical, i.e., root, R-O-O-T, organization. People like W.E.B. Du Bois were the shakers and the movers, and they were hated, okay,
yes, sir,
by many. And we have to understand we cannot get away from our roots. It's time to go back to those roots, to go back to maintain the integrity, you know, of that struggle. And again, I commend you, Reverend Brother Pinckney, and our guest, obviously, Comrade Brother. I commend you. We got a long struggle and a protracted struggle ahead. And we got to remind our people, and all people, all justice-loving people, that
mm-hmm.
is,
mm-hmm.
of all colors, we have to remind them of what this struggle is really all about. It's time to return home to our roots.
Exactly.
But go ahead. I'm sorry.
No.
Yeah, you landed on the land. We're not going to stop you now, Larry. Larry Pinckney.
No, I'm done. Brother Pinckney.
Yeah.
Go ahead, brother.
Yeah. But, you know, what you're saying is so tremendous, and this is the message that we want to get out to the people, because it's not just for black people, it's not just for white people, it's not just for the Chinese, it's for every single person. We're all in this together. Once they realize that we're in this together, we become a force. You see what I'm saying? We become a force. And the thing, what they normally do is try to separate us. If they can keep us separated, they can defeat us, because that's way we fight against each other. That way they
right.
don't have to do any fighting.
Mm-hmm.
So what
you're saying is so very true. As a matter of fact, it's spoken like a true Black Panther, a true revolutionary, because the Black Panther Party was built on one thing. It was built on the spirit of international revolution. It was built on the spirit of a one for all and all for one. And that is the basis of power, the supreme power from God, that supreme power with the party, and that power, all power,
mm-hmm.
to the revolutionary peoples throughout the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, that's tremendous. And, you know, we had some people who we could stand behind. You see, we during them days, we had a Larry Pinckney. We had a Huey P. Newton. We had a Bobby Seale, a Ezra Cleaver. We had a Alize. We had some folks that who was willing to stand up for the people, you see. When you're standing up for the people, it makes a big difference. And this
yeah.
is what it's all about. See, anytime you stand up for yourself, you see, they can get rid of you.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? And everything dies down. But it's all for the people. You know,
that's right.
You know, you can't get rid of all the people.
That's why what we use the expression, all power to the
mm-hmm.
people.
Yeah,
you know,
black
power to black people, white power to white people, brown power to brown people, yellow power to yellow people, red power to red people, all power to the people.
That's right.
All people.
All.
You know.
And our goal is not to exclude anybody. You
no,
see.
That's right.
I don't care who they are, who they are. Our goal is not to exclude them. And we don't want to exclude nobody. And like I tell folks all the time, see, my thing is this. I like to get people together, and I like to inform them. It's not important whether you like me or not, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And the most important thing that we have the same objective, you see. If we're shooting for social justice, we're shooting for justice for all, we can all sit down, because every last one of us, somewhere within our family lines, has been subjected to this criminal justice system, social justice, economic justice, environmental injustice. We done had
it
all.
That's right, and that's what it is, brother. It's injustice. I got
to
say it.
That's right.
We don't have no criminal justice system. We have a criminal injustice system.
That's
we
right.
have an economic injustice system. We have a social injustice system. Speaking of someone who spent a decade in prison, you know, speaking of someone who fought. When they threw me in prison, they thought they'd rape me, so they kept me for 10 years of my life. That's why I went to the UN and won,
mm-hmm.
following the words of Brother Malcolm X to take our case to the world. You know, so the bottom line, and I'm still fighting, and all of us are still fighting.
That's
what
right.
this struggle is about. And like, you know what you
as
said.
We must, as
Absolutely.
We must fight. Because this country was built on criminality. The criminality of Europeans coming and actually usurping the lands, properties, and heritage of Native American peoples. And then...
Right.
Going into Africa and actually pulling the criminal act of stealing human beings to come to bring to this country under chains to work this country and steal the mineral assets, the gold, silver. And other mineral assets of this country to utilize and plunder for themselves.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's right. That's
absolutely.
Right. And that makes me think of, again, Brother Leonard Peltier, a former leader of the American Indian Movement. You know, let us not forget that this struggle is a struggle of all oppressed people. Yes, we definitely push the struggle of black people as well, we should, but we do it in concert with all oppressed people.
Oh,
and,
oh.
You know, Leonard Peltier is a brother like Mumia Abdul-Jamal who has been languishing. Leonard's been languishing for 33 years,
33.
Set up and charged. You know,
wow,
33
wow.
years, okay? Mumia, for 30 years. You know,
yeah.
we have so many political prisoners in this country, it's ridiculous. We need to stop fooling ourselves. This country is in what I call a denial mode. We
mm-hmm.
want to deny. It's time for us to get rid of that denial, like Malcolm said. Stop saying and start swinging.
That's right. And you know, one of the things here, we had a brother here that spent 30 years in prison for a crime that he never committed. And nobody knew exactly how to get this brother out. They had the University of Wisconsin. They had Northwestern University, all these law departments. But the way that, you know, you're dealing with, anytime you're dealing with corruption on this level, you got to get the people moving. We,
right.
you know, we have to do this. The thing was, we got this young man out of prison.
Mm-hmm.
But the bad part, as soon as he got out of prison, he was only out 6 months and he died.
Oh, so no.
30 years in prison.
They took his life.
Huh?
They took his life. This is what they did. And
mm-hmm.
this is what we can never forget. They took his life. Not only his life, but he's an example. Your example says it all. He's an example. You know, they took his life. They have taken the life of millions. Of people, men, women, and children. They have taken their lives, and we've got to draw the line and stop this.
Absolutely, and we got to do it together. And,
yes.
and if we can do this thing together, because I always say it's more of us than them.
Then that's
yes.
true.
And it's easy. Remember this, the country, the government, and everything is ran by the people and for the people, but we have given that away. That's
yeah.
why it's ran by corporations for the corporations.
Exactly.
And that's why we're in this compromising position we are in today. But once we realize that it's more of us than them, we have a chance to renew this thing and get us going where we should be. I'm excited today because, just to be on the phone with Gabriel and my brother, Pinckney, I'm excited about just being this close to y'all because I know that both of y'all have been through this struggle. You see, you've been through this struggle for years. See, my struggle started when I was in college, but I didn't stop. See, the thing was, I knew what to do, but the point was, did I have the resources to do what needed to be done? That had been my biggest problem, not having the resources to fight. That's what I think about doing. But now what I did, I believe if we get enough manpower and use that manpower as resource, we can defeat these folks and hold them off.
So that's right.
We have to be talking unity. If we don't do nothing else, everything comes out of our mouth. We should be talking about unification. We should talk about unity, that we all going to do this together, regardless what they say. I don't care how they try to separate us. We're not going to allow it.
And we need to understand that.
Yeah.
It's very apropos that you said that. One of the main reason that I was tardy in joining you two gentlemen on the line, I just come back from a unity meeting over at a second masjid over on the east side. Brother Sami Muhammad was dedicating masjid, masjid number one on the east, number one east. The masjid number one west is over on Wyoming. And Brother Rasul Muhammad had come over to the masjid on the east, and there was a unity meeting. Things went fabulously at that particular meeting. And the overall agenda was unity.
Hey, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Hey, Sister Charity, can you hear me?
I certainly can.
You're there?
Yes, I am.
How you doing today, Sister Charity?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm feeling really, really blessed. I always love listening to your shows, and it's so neat because to get to hear three heroes speak like this is just so awesome.
Now, thanks, you know, I really appreciate that. That's a beautiful saying. See, we got Larry Pinckney and we got Gabriel Alize, and both of them are true soldiers, true warriors, and you know they have been they've been in the trenches for a long time, and this is what we need more of. And it's a blessing to have you. You're also in the trenches. You're a fighter yourself, and I appreciate you because you get the word out.
Well, I do what I can, but really, it's always an honor and a blessing to be, listening in and being part of your show when you let me talk. Thank you, and I keep you in my prayers and just a big virtual hug out to all three of you.
All right, well, that's a beautiful thing, and I got my brother there, Pinckney, though, so you got to say something special to him. So that's my brother.
Well, a great big virtual hug to him, too, and, of course, the guest as well.
All right,
keep my prayers.
Yeah, all right, keep Gabriel in your prayers, too.
Of course.
All right. See, I said it doesn't get any better than that. I mean, God is able to do all things.
Brother, before Sister Charity goes, let me just say this. Charity, you still there?
Yes, I am.
Well, Sister, we have heroes, that was very kind and very sweet and very revolutionary for you to say. But
right,
let me tell you one thing. We also have sheroes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Absolutely.
We got sheroes. And you are one of our sheroes, just like Kathleen Cleaver, just like, Erica Huggins, just like Rosa Parks. There would be no struggle and no movement without our sheroes. So
right.
I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Oh, you're just so sweet. Thank you.
It doesn't get any better than that. Libby, can we hear you?
when the truth is told, we must honor each and every revolutionary sister of each and every ethnic background, each and every nationality, because the struggle, the people's revolutionary struggle is global.
That's right.
And includes each and every human being that believes in brother and sisterhood across this earth.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. It doesn't get any better than that. That's a blessing all by itself. Libby, are you on the air? Libby, can you hear me? Libby.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay, well, thank you for recognizing me and allowing me to read a couple of short things here. I felt maybe it would be time to shed a little light on Berrien County and the representative to Congress from Berrien County, and this is Representative Fred Upton, the heir to the Whirlpool fortune.
Uh-huh.
We just want to be truth tellers on this show sometimes. So this
mm-hmm.
is
awesome.
Yep. Two short things here. One is from bhbanco.org, and I'm reading. It says, "Only in Berrien County and only Representative Fred Upton. In his Southwest Michigan district, representative to U.S. Congress, Fred Upton, is increasingly being called Fred Upchuck, and his Whirlpool company newspaper, the Herald Palladium, is known as the Herald Pollution. It's a shameful rag which hides all Whirlpool and Upton secrets and tries to keep the county population in the dark about information of any import. A recent front page Herald Pollution piece crystallizes the problem faced by county residents who care about being educated on real news. A quick look at the following letters to the editor, surprisingly printed by the Herald Pollution, tells the sickening story. Letters have been shortened, but no wording has been altered. Now, the first one is the only one I'll read because it tells exactly what this front page article is all about.
For sure.
And the headline is, "Who cares what music is being played for House callers?" And that means House of Representatives. And this writer says, "I am sincerely offended that the Herald Palladium would headline the front page of the paper with Fred Upton being upset about the music being played during on-hold telephone calls to the Congress. A brief paragraph elsewhere in the paper would have been more appropriate. Mr. Upton should be embarrassed as well. His energy should be devoted to some critical thinking about solving the major problems facing the country and not about what music is being played during the on-hold telephone calls to Congress." Now, just to piggyback on that, I go over to the Kalamazoo Gazette, an article which is from September 15th. And it's very short, and it says, "Fred Upton still among the richest in Congress." And there's a photograph of him wearing what I'm sure are very expensive clothing. And it says simply that U.S. Representative Fred Upton, Republican from St. Joseph, Michigan, is again listed as one of the most affluent members of Congress. He ranks 31st among the 50 richest members of Congress in the latest rankings, based on 2008 financial disclosure statements that were due in May, according to Roll Call, a Washington, D.C. political news source. Upton moved up from 39th place in 2007 and was one of a handful of wealthy federal lawmakers who saw the value of their minimum net worth increase amid the economic recession. An heir to the Whirlpool Corporation fortune, Upton listed assets of $8.07 million, up from $7.21 million the previous year, and no liabilities. He was the only Fed...
None.
I'm almost done. That's million with an M, as in Mary.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yep. Upton was the only federal lawmaker from Michigan to make the top 50 list. And this is, by the way, in the county, which could be, have, actually, it's the county with the poorest town in Michigan, and a Kalamazoo college professor states that it's Benton Harbor is the poorest town in the United States. But anyways, let me say that once more. He was the only federal lawmaker from Michigan to make the top 50 list. And then it just says U.S. Senator John Kerry from Massachusetts continued his top ranking in 2008. His minimum net worth is $167.5 million, followed by U.S. Rep. Daryl Issa, Republican California, net worth of $164.7 million. And of the 50th wealthiest members of Congress, 28 are Democrats and 22 are Republicans. But let me just add in my own words that I'm sure the three of you will get right on top of. We just call them Republicrats.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Mm-hmm. Well, you know that.
Yeah.
You know that's what I write.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But, you see, I first learned that term in the Green Party when I joined, I don't know, 8 or 9 years ago, and then I have in the writing of Larry Pinkney on the fabulous Black Commentator website.
Very
thank
good.
You, thank you.
And very good. And you know what you really want to know about the Upton family? Not only it's about 10 of them, of them Uptons that's heir to that world war, but for Fred Upton, the U.S. representative, he's the heir to all this.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the other part of the family are not part of what he's next in line to take over total control of Whirlpool, and he's doing everything he can right now to enhance his chances. See, Whirlpool is just one step away from being junk stock. I mean, and you know, and I like to say I want to take credit, some of that credit, because of the boycott that we having of Whirlpool. But the NAACP said we should not use the word boycott. So
why?
Well, they say it's a word that they don't use anymore. You see, they say, well, I can boycott. Don't get me wrong. The boycott will continue. But the point is, they say that they don't like to use that word boycott.
Do they have a substitute word that means the same thing?
Good question.
Or they. Well, we didn't hear the substitute word, let's put it that way, not on Friday. listen to me closely. It might be a word that they might want to use, but it wasn't shown as of Friday.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean, now, here's the deal now. They're coming out with some new bylaws, because these bylaws are too strict. So what we're doing, I explained to them that we are boycotting Whirlpool. And,
oh,
and
I'm glad, because I know I'm going to keep using that word.
Oh, I'm going to use it forever. And here's the deal. They was telling me, like he was saying, he said, that's a word that we don't use. Then he emphasized it inside the meeting. That, you know,
so they
that, you
use
know,
the word apartheid?
Well,
apartheid.
That might be a better, I like that word better.
Huh? Because,
I like that word better.
I mean, you know, you live in the apartheid township of Benton Harbor.
But even
in apartheid South Africa, throughout the whole country, they had boycotts.
Yeah.
Just like in Mississippi, or should I say Michigan, Mississippi.
Right. You got to remember. You got to remember what Benton Harbor, what the NAACP actually do. You know, they have went to sleep for the last 10 years.
Yes, you're right.
You see,
exactly
so now they're being woke up.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask one question?
You go
Did
right
you,
ahead.
When you were at the meeting of the NAACP recently, did you hear of any other words that they've boycotted?
None. You don't hear of any work that they have done.
Uh-huh.
And my thing was this. I said, well, I'm a man of action, and I expect when I call for help, y'all come down here and help. That's
mm-hmm.
what I said. These are my words. And, well, they said, well, we're going to start doing more things. We're just gonna start doing. This is what the guy Gill, the one came down, and you met him. He was the one who actually said that And because I told him, I said, you know, for the last 10 years, the NAACP had did exactly nothing. I said, matter of fact, I'm embarrassed to be president or the commander-in-chief of the NAACP because you have done nothing. And Larry, remember when I told you, I mean, I could listen to your voice and you was in your eyes, but then you understood what I was trying to do. You know, I had that feeling, you said, why is he going to want to be the president of NAACP? You know, that's what I felt when I was talking to you. And I was saying, I said, well, it's only to recruit people and to get this thing going. If we get us, if we get 1,000 people, I tell you, if we have 1,000 people by March, it's going to scare everybody in this whole county. And
well,
probably
can
the
I
whole
ask,
thing.
I have another comment or question.
Go right ahead.
If you get that many people, it seems like, you know, or even if you don't, I'm wondering if you can sort of run the NAACP branch in Benton Harbor in your own style, or will they do, if they dislike or don't approve of some of the moves that you make, will they, do they try to shut you down, or,
well,
you know what I mean? Is
here's
there any
the secret. If they don't approve what I do on the NAACP, they won't. They can't approve what I do on the Bango. See, anything that the NAACP.
Well, that's a different organization.
Right, but the point is, the same people that's part of the NAACP will be part of Bango. You see?
Yeah, I know, but still, what if the NAACP asks for your quarterly report?
Oh, we're gonna give it to them. They got it. We're gonna make sure. Look, I'm a man who do things in order. Whatever they want, whatever they need, they are going to get. And I'm happy to do give them my report.
I still wonder if they shut down chapters that actions that they don't approve of.
Well, you know, once I be in for a couple of years and get this thing rolling, we're moving towards Banco, get Banco back together again.
I would say the same thing to them as I would say to the corporations. It's up to them to prove nationally that they are different. It's up to them to prove that they are different. It's
That's
about
right.
the power to the people. The people are going to determine whether
That's
we
right.
call them NAACP, whether we call them Urban League, whether we call them whatever we call them. It's going to ultimately come down to the power of the people. So if they want to, you know, let's assume that they're going to do the right thing and be supportive.
Mm-hmm.
But if they don't do the right thing and be supportive, then they're going to have to deal with the wrath of the people.
That's right, absolutely. And I don't think right now they don't want to do it because it appears I'm pretty popular across the country. Let me say this. On Friday, Dr. Carruthers was in Washington, D.C., talking to the House of Representatives in reference to me. What they had,
I hope Fred Upton was there.
Well, I don't know whether he was there or not. I'm going to get her report shortly. But there was 22 organizations from around the country that was there who demanded that they do an investigation down here in Benton Harbor. And see, what make it so good, even if they do nothing.
Did she talk about, I'm sorry to interrupt, did she talk about the court?
Don't interrupt at this time, we got less than a minute. And,
sorry.
And what I want to do, I want to get this in so people can understand that we're continuing this fight.
Mm-hmm.
And whether they like it or not. We got people now who's all across the country who's saying that we have to take this thing to a whole different level. And they are in full support of what we're trying to accomplish. But listen, I'm going to cut it off there. But, Larry, do you have a few last words? We got about 40 seconds, so you can take 20, and then we got Gabriel have a few. And, Libby, you can sing your song.
All power to the people. The struggle continues. Let's just keep on intensifying. That's all I have to say to my good brothers and my good sisters.
Amen. Gabriel.
Dear and respected brothers, sisters, and elders, all power to the people. It has been part of our motto of the Black Panther Party since its inception.
Amen.
If, in fact, we are killed and find ourselves at the gates of hell, we will organize a Black Panther Party and barbecue the devil himself.
Amen.
Go ahead.
All right. Sister Charity, you got something to say?
God bless and keep you all.
God bless you. Libby?
If there's one thing we did right, was the day we stood to fight. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on.
Hold on. Keep going.
Hold on. If there's one thing we did right, was the day we stood to fight. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on.
Amen. Amen. Excellent. Really appreciate each and every one of you. And I will talk to y'all soon. God bless you. And really appreciate wonderful, wonderful, wonderful show. Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Gabriel.
Love you,
thank
my
you,
brother.
Libby. Thank you, Sister Charity. Thank you all. And thank you, Dorothy. Yeah, you did good. Everybody is on this. We got a full schedule, full load here. I will talk to y'all later. God bless you.
Bye.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.